RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for another Health Hacks here at RCR Reality Check Radio. Dr. Glenn Davies, reversalnz.co.nz, is back with us. Glenn, good to have you back.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me back, Paul.
Let's look ahead to the future. And this is something you've been working on with other people, and we're going to go through the points. So first of all, set us up for what we're about to talk about.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about the future of medicine. And I don't know about you, Paul, but I love watching sci-fi dystopian type movies. I don't think we're talking about that far into the future. I really have no idea what medicine might look like in 50 or 100 years.
Yeah.
I'm more thinking over the next decade. So I'm not thinking about AI programmed robots and those kind of scans that we used to see on Star Trek. I'm really just thinking of what it might look like in the next decade, and perhaps a positive view of how it might improve.
Well, we've never had so much knowledge on board. That's number one, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's correct.
Yeah. Well, that should help. So we've got to take what we know and apply it to give a rebirth to the medical system. And we sort of know what we know. But isn't there a philosophical thing that has to happen first?
Yeah. I think we need to go back about 200 years. And we've talked about this before, Paul, but two French scientists, so Louis Pasteur and Anton Beauchamp, and they have what scientists do. They had a robust discussion, and I'm not going to do the French accent, but there would have been some strong words. Some of that would have included Maird, I expect, but they would have called each other's names. But they had this robust discussion, and it was Louis Pasteur that said it's all about the germs. It's about the I guess they didn't have the correct names for them back then, but we know as viruses and bacteria. And Anton Beauchamp, he said, no, they do exist, they are a problem, but if you have a strong immune system or the terrain or the host is strong, then the germs don't have a chance. And anyone that's a gardener will sort of know this well. You know, if you've grown your plants in compost, you fertilize them, they're strong, they're more resistant to the caterpillars than the ones that are weak. That's the concept that Beauchamp was trying to describe. And these two men fought it out, and Louis Pasteur won the battle. And as a consequence of that, for the last 200 years, medicine has been doing germ theory. Now, we've seen that play out with the response to COVID-19, you know, this idea that the virus, the vaccine will keep us safe. But I think times have changed. And if you think back 200 years, you know, that was the days of, or maybe a little bit further back, but the plague, you know, people died from infectious diseases, you know, consumption, TB would have been a major issue, syphilis probably, you know. Nowadays, we've moved away from people dying predominantly of infectious diseases, and now people are predominantly dying of these lifestyle diseases, these chronic diseases. And I would argue that germ theory, or the modern equivalent of it, the pharmaceutical model, is no longer fit for purpose to deal with the modern epidemic of lifestyle diseases.
Right. Okay, well, so from that basis, we move forward then.
Yeah, so we move forward. So there's just a lovely quote down here that sort of typifies germ theory, the modern version of pharmaceutical medicine. Yeah, this is from Henry Gadsden, who was the CEO of Merck and Company, which I think now is Merck Sharp and Dohme, between 1965 and 1975. He made some quite stunning statements. He said, the taking of drugs is to be as everyday as chewing gum. That was his ambition. And he was famously spoke of his desire to sell drugs to healthy people in order to expand the customer base.
Gosh.
And during his 10-year stewardship of that company, he quadrupled the company's earnings to $1 billion, which I guess nowadays doesn't sound massive, but I think back in 75
that was
or 1965 when I was born, that would have been quite an achievement. So the pharmaceutical industry was attempting to sell drugs to healthy people and make it as common as chewing gum. And I think they have achieved their aim in many ways.
So cynical, isn't it?
I think so. It sounds cynical. It's all about profit and nothing is about health. You know, that begs the question, is the pharmaceutical industry about health or is it only about returns to their shareholders?
The audience can answer that one. Just listen for a moment. Okay, yeah, I get it.
That was a question, by the way, not a statement of fact.
No. I took that. I think I heard the answer. All right.
Okay, so we could move on then to use type 2 diabetes as an example of perhaps how germ theory is failing to deal with this modern condition. So what would germ theory say about type 2 diabetes? It would say this is a chronic, irreversible condition that inevitably results in blindness, dialysis, and limb amputation if you do not take our medicines.
Yeah.
No, the fear part.
Oh, that's a lot of fear. That's a horror movie.
Yeah. And most people will eventually require insulin injections, even if you take the tablets. And we're not really sure what causes it. We've got a few ideas, but we haven't quite worked it out yet. But while we're working it out, take these medicines to keep your eyes and kidneys safe. That's basically the standard approach to type 2 diabetes, which I believe is 100% and completely wrong. So what do I believe is the truth about type 2 diabetes? I believe that it is easily preventable. It's easily reversed. We absolutely know the cause of type 2 diabetes, and we've talked about this many times before. It's ultra-processed food, sugar, and too much carbohydrate in the diet. The treatment is well understood, and it is proven over and over and over again by all sorts of clinical trials. And the idea is that we do not need a whole lot of medicines, and we especially don't need insulin injections. What we need is to change the way that we are eating and other aspects of our lifestyle. So what I just said just then most recently, that's terrain theory, that's host theory. If you look after the machine well, if you look after your body well, you won't get type 2 diabetes, or you're very unlikely to. And it's very different from the germ theory. And this is empowering. You know, this is saying if you learn about this condition, learn what to do, and you do it, you can make this condition go away. It's the exact opposite of the pharmaceutical model.
Just reminded me, a doctor told me not too long ago when he asked me how I was recovering from my heart surgery. I said, well, it's good. I'm back running again. And if I can be running again, I think I'm okay. And he said, you've got to think of it this way. It's great to go out and running, but if you had an expensive sports car, supercar, and you took it out every day and thrashed it, but never maintained it, or never cared for it in the way that something like that, a vehicle, I guess there's some equivalence with the human body, then you're going to waste it. And I got the message on that.
Yeah. Well, there's truth in that if it's thrashing it, but daily moderate exercise is extremely good for us.
Well, I was sort of skiding a bit, you know, 30, maybe sometimes 40 Ks cumulatively, and he sort of looked at me and he knows my age. So it was in that context. But I had sort of made an assumption that if I was back running again, no matter what, it's okay. But there's more to it than that.
Yeah, yeah. And all of this is about balance, of course. So I've used this analogy before. What I think is fundamentally a problem with general practice or primary care, and these comments don't necessarily refer to secondary and tertiary care, because my comment would be, I think the hospitals are going really, really well. I think they know what they do and they're doing their job well. Yep. I think they're dramatically underfunded, but with the resources they have, I think the hospitals are doing a great job. However, I don't think that primary care, general practice, is doing as good a job. And I think the problem is we're not making anyone better. You know, and it's very, very simple. We have to cure people and discharge them. One of the big advantages that the hospitals have is that they discharge people after they've had their time in hospital. General practice hoards everybody. You know, everyone comes back to general practice and they're enrolled and they're never discharged. I think we've got to change that concept completely.
Yeah.
And the concept that I would like, I'd like people to be registered with the general practice. So, you know, people have access if they need that care. But I would change the word enrollment to be those people who are having an active treatment course. For example, someone who's diagnosed with pre-diabetes, I'd love them to go into the general practice for a year and have a comprehensive program that involves doctor's appointments, health coaches, nutritionists, exercise physiologists. I'd like them to have all of that for a year and then for them to be discharged back to that that first category.
Yep.
To me, that would really, really work. And the analogy that I use is if you were a mechanic and you had 8 cars come into your workshop every morning, but only 7 cars left at the end of the day, by the end of 365 days, it's going to be complete havoc. You're not going to be able to find the car you want to work on. It's just going to not work anymore. I think that's what's happening in general practice. We're just overfull. So how about you come in, you have your course of treatment, and then you are discharged back to that first category. To me, that's what general practice has to do.
Yeah, it's like a mechanic's yard that becomes a wrecker's yard.
Absolutely. And you can imagine if you're the apprentice and the mechanic says, I want you to go and get that Ford Telstar. It's behind those 30 other cars.
Yeah.
Can you get that out for me? It's just not going to happen. It's an overwhelmed system that is falling apart with over demand.
So the system will be forced to change at some point then, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it must change. What will cause it to change? Is it going to be a top-down change? I don't think so.
Well, will it be money, Glenn? Will it be,
won't be money. Not in the next year or so anyway.
We've had very clear
indication from the government that probably capitation won't even keep up with medical inflation. So there's not going to be a dramatic improvement in the capitation payment to general practice.
No, but looking further out, we've got a falling birth rate. There are questions around continuing to pay pensions like we are as we go, because we didn't put that superannuation scheme in place in 75 back with Norm Kirk. And, you know, with the obesity epidemic and the processed foods and all the other things, you could argue post-COVID, putting pressure on the secondary and tertiary parts of the system. You know, if you're out of money, that'll get your attention, won't it?
Yeah, I've actually been doing an uncontrolled experiment at the moment because I'm working in two completely different settings within primary care. So one is Reversal NZ, which is a private general practice, 100% privately funded, no government funding whatsoever. And then I'm working in a very low cost access rural practice, which is highly dependent on government subsidy. So people pay $19.50 for a doctor's appointment. So it's predominantly funded. And my uncontrolled experiment is to see how do I feel working in each of those two environments. What's the difference? I'm planning to write an essay on this. It's the whole purpose of this is just so I can write a really good essay at the end of it.
Yeah.
Not exactly true. So, you know, what's it like working in a private general practice? So it allows me to focus on the cause of the problem. Dealing with the cause, not the symptoms. I'm using host theory almost as my only approach. And I'm using lifestyle medicine and metabolic medicine as my treatment. I occasionally prescribe medicines, but usually not. I have 30 to 60 minute appointments. Our clients feel empowered. They are looking after their own health. They're not coming to the doctor and saying, fix me. They're coming to the doctor and we are walking together on their health journey. And at the end of it, clients are discharged when their problem is solved. You know, that's to me what the future of general practice might look like, or at least one version of the future of general practice, compared with how I feel in working in the small rural practice. Now, I love being there, you know, great environment, wonderful staff and amazing people, but it leaves me with this uncomfortable feeling because I know that I'm practicing pharmaceutical medicine. I have very limited appointment times, and largely all I have time to do is to write a prescription. It's very paternalistic, you know, it's do as I say, take this medicine. There's huge compliance costs to get that come associated with that funding. And their funding's just not enough to meet the needs of the community. So, yeah, it's a very different feeling. I feel ethically compromised working in that environment.
Wow, that's really interesting to hear you describe that, Glenn.
Mm.
Yeah.
However, I know that we're providing a service to this rural community, and that if that service disappeared, that would be a major, major problem. So this isn't all complaint at all. No. It's just a comparison of how it feels to be working in those distinctly different environments.
It's interesting that you are in the situation where you can do that. I'm thinking, though, under the one that you like, the way you like to do things, that if people are cured and discharged and not sort of coming through a revolving door, you free up then the time available, just in the way you're doing things, to accommodate those other people who go through the sort of the machine side of it into the other way that you like, the way that you like doing it.
Exactly,
so
right.
So that creates sort of efficiencies, right?
You're exactly right, Paul. There's 8 cars coming in the morning and there's 8 cars leaving in the evening. There's capacity is maintained. You know, that's the distinct difference between these two models. You know, and I think we have to look at the way that general practice is funded. I think we need a small payment for people being on the books, but I think we need to fund these episodes of care where we're actively managing a problem. And I even wonder, you know, the pharmacies should be taking on or should be asked to take on a much bigger role in the pharmaceutical model. You know, I don't think every prescription needs to go through the doctor. You know, I would see that the pharmacist could take on a much bigger role in this pharmaceutical model. And we need both. And people need to be given the choice, because it's absolutely true that not everyone will want to put in the effort that's involved in solving their own health problem. You know, that's a given. And for some people, just taking a medicine to deal with the symptoms is enough. I doubt that applies to many of the RCR listeners, but definitely there are people that say, nah, just give me the medicine, doc. It's too hard to do all that stuff, or I don't have time, or I don't have the energy, or I can't afford it. You know, so there is a place for this, but why isn't the pharmacy looking after all that repeat prescribing of palliative medicines to deal with the symptoms, and let general practices get on with these episodes of care where we're fixing the problem?
And on funding, because it has to be viable, you have to be paid for what you do. Under the lifestyle medicine hat, let's say, how would you account for successes? Well, that someone never shows up to anything or uses any resource. You have to track it in that sort of way, do you?
Yeah. It would be really important that you're accountable, because there's not a member of the public that hates anything more than hearing of public money being wasted. So absolutely, you'd need to be accountable. If I look at our experience with type 2 diabetes, now, we've had over 200 people reverse their diabetes. They are no longer diabetic anymore. They can be discharged from the program. in general practice, because nobody reverses their diabetes. Everyone stays there, and each year there are more and more and more people, forming. So, yeah, I think we should fund the reversal of diabetes, not the ongoing management of it, and that should be true of every other health condition that is reversible. You know, that includes high blood pressure and all the other chronic conditions that we deal with, but diabetes is a poster child because it's involving so many people now, and it alone and its cousins, which are all part of metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance, you know, hypertension and obesity and arthritis and all these other conditions that go together. If we could deal with that, the problem, insulin resistance, we would solve all of the issues facing general practice, I would claim 100%.
Wow. Just one fell swoop.
Yep. And it's not just the general practice, it's going to be the communities that have to become involved. In this small town that I'm referring to, we've done a community meeting where 60 people turned up, and the cafe has been come completely on board, and they're now offering low-carb and keto options. They're offering bulletproof coffees. 60 people came to the meeting. So, you know, you can do it at a community way as well.
It seems that if there's anything that needs to be reinvented, it mostly involves that component back to some kind of local, command and control, and people building communities to build resilience, which is health in the end anyway. And all that you can quantify, can't you? We know how much it costs to treat the average person with type 2 diabetes. We know the machinery and everything that needs to be bought at scale to deal with the numbers. So we can measure all that, I would have thought.
Can measure all that. And we're doing a trial with AUT University that's just being number crunched at the moment. I'm hoping that the health economist is going to get involved in that, and we can actually document how much money we have saved with those 200 people that reverse their diabetes. It's certainly been done by Dr. David Unwin in the UK, he's my idol, so I follow what he's done. He's certainly applied the numbers to it. And they're big numbers. I'm sorry I didn't bring them with me.
No, that's okay. But yeah,
cost savings are huge. And we have to save money. It's predicted to be $3.5 billion per year spent on diabetes by 2030. And we just can't afford that. We have to do something about it for the sake of our communities, our individuals, but also our budget.
I know we're up against time. It's always ticking away. Another thought from me. So there's psychology involved in this. Before, you just mentioned there are people who want to, who can't kind of do it for themselves or be in the role with the doctor that's the way you do things for type 2 diabetes. So there's psychology involved. You've got to influence or change a way of thinking as well. And that's not easy because it becomes a culture, doesn't it?
Yeah, and the pharmaceutical industry has created the culture within health, and everyone's first thought is, what is the medicine for that condition? That's the thinking or the culture that needs to change. It needs to change to, what can I do personally to solve this condition for myself, and how can the healthcare team support that? That's a change of thinking. It needs to change back to the terrain model rather than this a pill for every ill concept.
Yeah. Coming up against time, what more do you have to say in this Health Hacks about the future of medicine?
Well, this is from Thomas Edison, who I think I'm right invented the light bulb, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was his light bulb, was he? It was a light bulb moment.
And he said, the doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will instruct his patient in the care of the human frame, in diet, and in the cause and prevention of disease.
Incredible.
So a quote from Thomas Edison, that's what I follow. That's what I've got written on the bottom of my emails. That's what I see as the future of medicine. And I think if we could fund that concept, I think we would see general practice not only surviving but thriving into the future.
All right. Another interesting health hacks. Dr. Glenn Davies, thanks again.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.